This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Welcome, listeners, to the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary, located at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, Maryland. Now, we're here every Sunday morning at 10 a.m., and I will be with you again next Sunday with our guest, Tom Moltaire. We'll be talking about nutritional complications and deficiencies associated with common food sensitivities. Now, the show is streamed through myvillagegreen.com. You can visit the site to hear previous radio shows. You can also visit the Village Green site or the store on Cedar Lane for expert advice on supplements. They have information and helpers to answer your questions in both places. Now, there is a sale going on. It's already on, and it runs through July 21st. 30% off Pathway products, 25% off all other supplements, and 20% off body care products. So make sure you get down to the store on Cedar Lane and take advantage of the sale. Now, today we're very fortunate to have our guest, Michelle Simon, and she's president of Eat Drink Politics, and she's a public health attorney, a public health lawyer who's been researching and writing about the food industry and food politics since 1996, and she specializes in legal strategies to counter corporate tactics that harm the public's health. And she served as research and policy director for Marin Institute, now Alcohol Justice, an alcohol industry watchdog group, and I was very interested in this. Her groundbreaking 2007 report on alcoholic energy drinks led to a federal ban on these dangerous products. So we will certainly talk about that today. And welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Michelle. What we're going to talk about, I love. And I think this is becoming much more, I'm seeing more of the politics of food addressed now than we have before. So I think you're right on the cutting edge. Tell us a little bit more about your company and the goals, and of course, some of your efforts with regard to the food industry.
Sure. Well, most of my work is helping nonprofits and law firms keep the food industry accountable. And so you're right, we are seeing kind of an awakening that really at the heart of what's wrong with our food supply is this huge food industry, you know, driven by multinational corporations that really don't have our best interests at heart. And so what I try to do is various research and writing projects, sometimes op-eds, and in some cases consulting with law firms that want to sue the food industry, all with the aim to really exposing food industry deception, whether it's marketing to children or underhanded lobbying tactics, really getting underneath how the food industry operates to undermine the good work that many people around this country are trying to do to really fix the problems that we have related to our broken food system.
Well, you said that in a nutshell very nicely. Let's get into the nitty-gritty of it. I would really like you to talk about the drinks, the alcohol energy drinks, and how you were able to accomplish what you accomplished.
Sure. Well, you know, it was a rare victory, and I would say it was driven by a number of factors, but this was an example of the alcohol industry really crossing the line. So we've known for years, even decades, that the alcohol industry targets some of its products squarely at youth. And they do this by creating these highly sweetened beverages that would really be, that are too sweet for adult drinkers, even though they claim that they're aimed at adult drinkers. But youth tend to really like sweetened beverages. And of course, you know, they start on juices and graduate to soda, and then the alcohol industry kind of gets them hooked with these sweetened alcoholic beverages. Well, then they decided that wasn't good enough, that they should combine these sweetened alcoholic products with caffeine. And this was causing all kinds of problems because, as you can imagine, combining caffeine, a stimulant, with alcohol, a depressant, is not such a good idea. And so, in fact, many youth were winding up in emergency rooms. There have been several deaths caused by these very dangerous products. And so a campaign was launched that had kind of multi prongs to it, and there definitely was a grassroots media advocacy component, and then a number of state attorneys general. So these are the top law enforcers in the states got involved, and they were adamant that these products were dangerous and should be off the market. And so they started threatening lawsuits, investigating the leading companies, and finally we were able to get the attention of the Food and Drug Administration, because as it turns out, there is no approval of the use of caffeine in alcoholic beverages. And so that was ultimately the kind of the legal angle that we were able to succeed on. The FDA did a year-long investigation and agreed with those of us who had been saying that, indeed, this is not a safe combination. And so we were able to get those products off the market. So that was a huge victory. The bad news is these same products still exist, only without the caffeine, and now they come in 24-ounce containers, packed sometimes with 12% alcohol, and are, again, highly sweetened and come in all kinds of child-friendly flavors. So we still have, a long way to go when it comes to protecting youth from these types of predatory products, but at least we did have that one victory.
Well, excellent. Good work.
Thank you.
And thank you. What about the Farm Bill jackpot as far as corporations benefiting from SNAP, SNAP?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Farm Bill is a huge piece of legislation that comes around every 5 years and is so complicated that, really it takes the corporate lobbyists to figure out what's really going on. And, of course, that's the problem. And so the huge beneficiaries of at least parts of the Farm Bill are the big agriculture players that get the subsidies for commodity crops that fuel our highly processed, unhealthy food supply. So these are crops like corn and soy and wheat and rice, which, they sound innocent enough, but most of corn and soy goes to feed animals, which is the engine that drives our animal product-centered diet, and as well as processed foods. So, corn and soy are integral to high fructose corn syrup and hydrogenated oils and so forth. And so, it's really, and this policy stems from the Farm Bill. And so, there's this game going on now in Congress where there's a recognition that certain subsidies are really no longer, Congress does not have the same kind of tolerance for just outright farm subsidies that they did before. But now the game is on to try and switch over to what's another category of subsidy, which is known as crop insurance. And so the crop insurance industry is pushing for increases in that realm. And so it's essentially substituting what used to be direct payments out for crop insurance. And so these same crops, the corn, the soy, the wheat, these engines of our unhealthy food supply are remaining the number one beneficiaries of our agricultural policy. Meanwhile, fruits and vegetables, which, we all know everyone needs to be eating more of, remain kind of to the side. And they're actually referred to as specialty crops, which gives you an idea of, kind of where our priorities lie. We have to call them specialty crops, and they don't get the same kind of attention in the Farm Bill that these commodity crops do.
Well, what are you doing? What are your efforts? And what can our listeners do with regard to these issues?
Mm-hmm. Well, with the Farm Bill, there's definitely still some opportunities to get involved. Right now, the Senate is finalizing its version of the farm bill and voting on amendments left and right, but the House is yet to take up their version. And so, you know, there are groups that are working to try and improve the farm bill, to try and put some caps on crop insurance, just, you know, try to put some more money into fruits and vegetable programs to feed school children and so forth. And there are groups that that are working to try and make these sorts of improvements. And so I usually just encourage people to get involved. And one of them is Environmental Working Group. Another one is the National Coalition for National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, and another one is Food Democracy Now. There are a number of groups out there that are definitely trying to improve the situation. And another angle that's important right now on the Farm Bill, and I wrote a report on this recently, which is food stamps. So most people don't realize actually the majority of the Farm Bill, as much as 2/3 to 3/4 of the Farm Bill budget, actually goes to this huge food assistance program, which is not formally called food stamps now. It's got a fancier name, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. But, you know, unfortunately, the Senate has just approved cuts to this program, even though, you know, more and more people, unfortunately, are having to take advantage of this really important safety net. And, you know, my report was looking at, well, before we talk about cuts to this program, why don't we look at to what extent the food industry, the junk food industry, food retailers like Walmart, and turns out the banks, all have a very vested interest and make money from this very large government program. And this is something that I'm trying to, you know, shine a light on and say we need more transparency to say what are the role of these major corporations in benefiting from this program, and how do we make sure that people who really need the food assistance and, you know, take a look at how they can get the healthiest food possible through this large program, because right now, really, you can buy pretty much anything you want with food stamps, and that's, you know, not such a good idea when we have an epidemic of chronic disease.
Well, I'm right there with you. And for those of you who may have just tuned in, we're talking with Michelle Simon. We're talking about the subject, how the food industry undermines our health and how to fight back. We'll have much more conversation on this when we get back. I'm Dana Lake, and I'm your host for the day with the Essentials of Healthy Living, and we're brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. So stay with us. We will be right back after this break.
Whether you're an active baby boomer, a weekend warrior, or a professional athlete, Boron's Arnicare Gel is the perfect solution to all life's little injuries. Arnicare, which contains the healing benefits of homeopathic Arnica Montana, can be used safely to treat muscle pain, stiffness, swelling, and bruising due to minor injuries, overexertion, and surgery. The non-greasy gel has no artificial colors, perfumes, or parabens. Arnicare is also available in cream and ointment formulas. You can find Arnicare at Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Visit Arnicare on the web at arnicare.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. They are the only raw multivitamin to include live enzymes and probiotics, amino acids, and antioxidants. They are gluten and dairy free with no soy allergens. Vitamin Code is uncooked, untreated, unadulterated, and binder free. Vitamin Code Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Get the one tiny pearl that delivers big acidophilus, 900% more. Get acidophilus pearls from Enzymatic Therapy. Each little pearl-shaped capsule makes a big impact, delivering up to 900% more live probiotics to the intestine than other products. This revolutionary product aids digestion, supports a healthy immune system, and is perfect for travelers who want to enhance intestinal health. This season, make sure to take the pearls that give you big acidophilus. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Staying mentally sharp means nourishing the mind as well as the body. That's why there's new Cognisure from Metagenics. Research shows that the active natural ingredient in Cognisure supports multiple mechanisms necessary for maintaining healthy cognition and a healthy brain as it ages. Cognisure is also easy to take in delicious, chewable chocolate tablets. Have a clear and bright future by maintaining mental capacity with healthy habits and Cognisure. Remember Cognisure for healthy brain aging support. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Are you under a lot of stress at work? pressure from the boss, budget cuts, impossible workloads, it can all take a serious toll on your health. But we can help. Village Green Apothecary has everything you need for a healthier lifestyle, a wide range of nutritional supplements, health-related books, and more. We've been providing customized nutrition and healthy living resources for 45 years, and we'll take the time to advise you about your unique needs. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to the second segment of the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM. The show is brought to you by Village Green Apothecary, located at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda. I'm Dana Lake, and I alternate the show with Dr. Kevin Passaro, and we try to bring you a wide variety of really good information all about your health. Now, we are here every Sunday morning at 10 a.m., and I'll be with you again next Sunday with our guest, Tom Altier. We'll be talking about nutritional complications and deficiencies associated with common food sensitivities. Now, the show is streamed through myvillagegreen.com, and you can visit the site to hear previous radio shows. We have begun an interesting conversation about the food industry undermining our health and how we can fight back, what we can do about it. And we've been discussing this with Michelle Simon, and she's a public health lawyer who has been researching and writing about the food industry and food politics since 1996. So let's keep the conversation going. We had been talking about SNAP, which has to do with the food stamp subsidies. And I think what our listeners would be interested in hearing is what's the nitty-gritty of this. People may know about the food stamp program. They may see people using them. What do the food stamps cover? What should they be covering? And what could we possibly eliminate in this program?
Right. Well, you know, the parameters of what one can buy with food stamps is pretty wide open. So unlike, say, the WIC program, which is the Women, Infants, and Children, which is pretty limited in what you can purchase through WIC coupons, the SNAP program, even though it is a nutrition program, is pretty wide open. So that's why it's been really become a controversial program. So, for example, a couple years ago, New York City decided, well, maybe it doesn't make sense to have SNAP participants purchase soda, right? I mean, this is a product that has zero nutrition in it, and we know it's contributing to obesity, diabetes, et cetera. And so New York City decided, because, you know, they have been a leader in a number of public health measures, to apply to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which administers SNAP, to say, gee, can we just try a pilot project, right, to not allow SNAP participants to purchase soda. And it caused this huge uproar. Of course, the soda industry went crazy and fought against it. And then, sure enough, a year and a half later, the USDA came back and said, no, sorry, we don't really think that's such a good idea to, you know, to say that our tax dollars shouldn't be subsidizing the sale of sugar-sweetened beverages. And that's just one example of the kind of controversy that this is causing. And it turns out a number of states are interested in the same thing. So in my research, I found that 9 states have proposed similar, they're proposing bills to try to get to the same goal, which is to say we really want to look at how we can improve this program. So right now, like I said, it's, you know, it's pretty much anything except supplements. I mean, it's kind of ironic. I've heard people complain, you know, I can't buy protein powder, which, you know, may or may not be the best thing for you. But the point is, you know, you can't buy protein powder with food stamps, but you can buy Coca-Cola and candy and chips and so forth. So, you know, there is some irony there in the way the program is laid out. And all of this, of course, benefits the junk food industry. And what I found is that, you know, the likes of Kraft and Mars and Coca-Cola and PepsiCo and General Mills, they are all heavily lobbying around this program to keep the status quo, right, because they don't want to see improvements to it. They like the fact that you can purchase all these junk food products with government dollars because it's a huge subsidy to them. And that's something that I think should change.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. What we're seeing then is more of the corporate aspects of food and the food industry influencing our personal choices. And one of the complaints I always have is that when you listen to ads for food on TV or products, it's all commercial. There aren't enough ads, and I've been hoping that the natural food industry would start countering with more ads of, have you bought fresh broccoli today? One of the ads, I think it's the V8 ad, is clever. They say, you know, you're supposed to have five, but what they don't tell you is you don't have to eat them, drink V8. And in a very short period of time, somebody just learned a whole lot. Five vegetables, vegetable juice. And we're not seeing those kinds of ads enticing people, interesting them in making their own gardens. Michelle Obama has certainly started enlightening people about this, but it seems so late. And Michelle, why aren't we spending more money from the natural food industry to promote healthy eating?
Well, first of all, you know, we can never compete with the likes of PepsiCo and Coca-Cola. I mean, these companies spend billions of dollars a year on marketing. So, you know, the broccoli farmers just can't compete with that kind of marketing power. So I don't think the solution really lies in just, you know, advertising fruits and vegetables, because what we really need to do is get the junk food advertising to stop, right? I mean, if you think about kind of how people ate before advertising came along. We just got hungry and we ate what was around and what we grew. And, you know, it really wasn't a problem. We didn't eat because someone told us to eat. We didn't eat healthfully because someone told us to, right? That's all that was available, and that's just, you know, what we do naturally. What's happened is corporations have gotten in the way of all that by promoting the unhealthiest food, and that kind of marketing is especially marketing to children. I mean, you know, I don't believe in marketing healthy food to kids. I think we should stop marketing to children, period, because children don't even understand what marketing is or that they're being marketed to or how it works and how pernicious it is. So, you know, and then I also do want to say, though, about the natural food industry, you know, there is a lot of problems, in fact, with how some sectors of the processed natural food industry is marketing. And, in fact, I've been looking at some of the natural claims. So, you know, the word natural has very little definition under the law. And many so-called natural food companies are taking advantage of that and slapping the natural label on all kinds of processed food products where it doesn't belong. So, you know, I think we have to be cautious about going down that road for a number of reasons.
Right. And the at least the organic has a definition and guidelines. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And natural doesn't always mean healthy anyway. Mm-hmm. So what can people do? Our food choices are both personal and political. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, I think too often we get stuck in this realm of, oh, you know, what's the big deal? It's really just up to the individual to make better choices. And, you know, certainly that's the kind of rhetoric that we hear from the food industry, that they're providing all these choices and we just need to, you know, eat a diet of moderation and so forth. And, you know, the truth is that the food industry's messaging and really changing our environment to make eating unhealthy food the norm and the default and the easiest thing to do, right? So when you just walk down the street and, you know, you're bombarded with all kinds of opportunities to eat junk food. And so, you know, what we try to do in public health policy is to change the environment to say, well, why shouldn't healthier choices be the norm, be the default, be the easier way to make choices? And that's really where public policy comes in. So, of course, we all have a role to play. I'm not saying it's, you know, it's all up to government or, you know, that the fault lies completely with corporations. But the question is, how do we as a society want to organize ourselves and make democratic decisions as opposed to corporate-run decision-making around what's even available to us? And, you know, we do have a huge problem with food deserts and neighborhoods that don't have access to truly healthy, affordable, fresh food. And that's something that is really a crisis of policy that needs to change.
It sure does. Years ago, when I was first really interested in nutrition, there was a 60 Minutes expose on the fact that the schools of dietetics were really funded by the commercial food industry. And they showed a plaque in the Harvard School of Nutrition. And it's some of the names that you mentioned and many more. It was all American Sugar Association, Pepsi-Cola, da-da-da-da-da-da, Kellogg, General Foods. And what they were trying to say is this is an incestuous relationship. And so people became trained in schools based on the fact that processed foods were what we needed. And the very first nutrition course I took certainly pushed me in another direction. We were told that fiber was an anti-nutrient and that it's a fad to tell people they need to eat fiber and that there's nothing wrong with white bread. Well, wow. I was shocked because I was already very enthusiastic about doing things more naturally. So I was shocked to be in this course and didn't quite know why we were being told this. And the woman said, the professor said, you used to be able to identify the quacks because they didn't have MDs or PhDs. But now the MDs and PhDs are on the quack side, so you can't identify them as easily. So we've come a long way from there. But with hydrogenated oils, something you mentioned, I've been lecturing on that since the 70s. I was not a psychic. I didn't have advanced knowledge. And it is shocking to me that the USDA, the FDA, American Heart Association, NIH, National Heart, Lung, Blood, all pushed hydrogenated oils. Where were the scientists? I can't believe that it went on, and it still goes on. The only reason we cut back on hydrogenated oils is that Europe refused to do business with us if we had trans fats in the foods. So hooray for Europe, and shame on us. How rapidly do you see things changing? Is there a paradigm shift coming up for us on this issue?
Well, I feel like there's sort of parallel tracks, right? So on one hand, there's no question the last few years we've seen much more awareness, much more attention paid, you know, media, Michelle Obama, I mean, books left and right, documentaries, you know, a lot more buzz about these problems. And the local food movement has certainly, you know, made a lot of progress. But on the other side of the fence is sort of the rest of America, who, you know, really couldn't care less about the latest documentary, is not reading these books, and certainly not reading my blog. So, you know, we really have to be thinking much more broadly about how to fix these problems to reach, you know, the 98% of Americans that just aren't, don't, like I said, don't have access or just kind of scraping by with two jobs and doing the best they can to feed their families. But, you know, all they have access to is Walmart, where, you know, maybe the cheapest thing is the junk food and not the healthier food that may even be available there or may not be, depending on, you know, how fresh the produce that day is at Walmart. So, you know, I just feel like we need to really be thinking much more broadly and realize that, you know, a few more farmers markets here and there isn't going to cut it.
Yes, you said that very well. For those of you who have just tuned in with us, you're listening to Michelle Simon, and we're talking about how the food industry undermines our health and how to fight back. And Michelle is the author of Appetite for Profit, which is a book all about what we're talking on. And so stay with us. The show is brought to you by Village Green and Village Green Apothecary. And I'm Dana Lake with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on 1500 AM. Stay with us. We'll be back after this break.
Megafood Premium Whole Food Supplements are the only supplements crafted from scratch with farm-fresh whole foods to deliver nourishment the way nature intended. Megafood believes Mother Nature knows best. They select only fresh whole food, harvested at the peak of ripeness, handle it gently and with care to deliver its vital essence to you in every bottle. Megafood, from farm to tablet, our name is our promise. For more information, visit us online at megafood.com.
Zymogen is pleased to announce the arrival of Fit Food, a delicious, high-quality, functional food that's formulated to support weight management, healthy body composition, glycemic management, cardiovascular and immune health, and more. Each delicious serving of Fit Food contains 21 grams of pure New Zealand-sourced bioactive whey protein, 6 grams of fiber immune-supporting oat beta-glucan, and additional glutamine, glycine, taurine, and MCTs. Fit Food provides holistic support for today's active body. Learn more at Zymogen.com. Available now through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
All over the world, people are beginning to discover fish oil is one of the best secrets for unlocking great health. Thousands of studies have shown the amazing effects of these powerful omega-3s for heart health. Plus, fish oils have even been shown to balance moods and lessen anxiety. With exceptional taste, unrivaled freshness, and unsurpassed purity, Nordic Naturals is the easy way to get your omega-3s every day. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet, committed to pure and great-tasting omega oils.
The brain requires nutrition just like the rest of the body, and this is where GeroFormula's NeuroOptimizer comes to the rescue. NeuroOptimizer is a concentrated source of nutrients needed for memory, mood, concentration, and focus. NeuroOptimizer supplies the building blocks for neurotransmitters, the chemicals that allow cells in the brain to communicate and to file away memories. NeuroOptimizer is the nutritional answer to the brain's needs. To learn more about formulas, visit Gero.com. Gero Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Do you have unique needs that a mass market pharmacy can't handle? Village Green Apothecary can help. Maybe your doctor prescribed a special compounded formula for you, or you have concerns about allergies or dietary supplements. We invite you to talk with one of our compounding specialists today. Our team of 50 includes pharmacists, nutritionists, a clinical herbalist, and a naturopath offering customized products and personalized healthy living plans to ensure your well-being. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to the third segment of the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, Maryland. I'm Dana Lake, and I alternate the show with Dr. Kevin Pissarro, and we try to bring you a lot of good, interesting information all about you and your health. We are here every Sunday morning at 10 a.m., and I'll be with you again next Sunday talking with Tom Altair on nutritional complications and deficiencies associated with common food sensitivities. Now, our guest today is Michelle Simon, president of Eat Drink Politics, and our topic is how the food industry undermines our health and how to fight back. She is the author of Appetite for Profit, and we'd love to be able to cover everything, but we can't, so we're trying to talk about the subjects that are near and dear to her heart. We've also talked a little bit about the health of the public, and that's what's prompting so much attempts to change right now. But the corporations, in our opinion, are getting in the way. By the way, I'm in the process of finishing a book, and we were talking about the recommended dietary allowances, and the RDAs are set to satisfy 97% to 98% of healthy people in given groups, age groups, et cetera, gender and age divisions. So I actually had a statistician give me the figures. I said, tell me how many people then are considered healthy. And he looked at the chronic conditions. So we didn't even look at acute conditions. We looked at chronic conditions and developmental issues. And basically about 74% of Americans are not healthy. And 24% are unhealthy. So the RDAs don't even apply to the 74%. And I actually think that if we could get that statistical, the statistics actually more clear, that it would be closer to 80, 85% are not healthy. But anyway, Michelle, let's talk about a little bit more of what's in your book, something interesting that maybe our listeners have not heard in the past.
Oh, okay. So the book is about sort of this hypocrisy that, you know, on one hand, the food industry claims to be part of the solution, and they're really fixing this problem by changing the nutrition of their products and by being more responsible in the way they market to children. And you know, they're really doing all kinds of public relations when it comes to, you know, claiming that they're good guys. And then, but the reality is far different. So I, you know, I sort of took a look under the hood and said, well, let's see, you know, what it means when McDonald's says, oh, look, we sell salads now, or, you know, Coca-Cola says we've stopped marketing to children under age 12. Well, there are many ways that these food companies are making claims that are simply not true and are just a bunch of window dressing. And then, you know, so, for example, when McDonald's says, oh, they sell salads, well, you know, some of their salads have more calories than their cheeseburgers. And similarly, we have companies like General Mills slapping a whole grain label on such ridiculous cereals like Reese's Puffs. And, you know, I mean, almost so many cereals that these companies make are just candy in a box, and they're targeting them straight at children. And, of course, Coca-Cola is notorious for its deception and marketing in all kinds of ways that make sure children see their products. And so, you know, there's just this grand hypocrisy going on. And then, you know, on top of that is all the ways that these very same companies who say that they've changed their ways are lobbying to stop any common sense public policies from going forward. So, like, improvements to the types of food that's sold through school vending machines, or menu labeling, which they fought for years until they sort of gave in as long as they could get one very low national standard imposed. And then, of course, issues like taxes are vehemently opposed to and have been fighting tooth and nail on that front as well. And so, you know, really it's just, it's all smoke and mirrors. The food industry wants you to believe that they are responsible and are doing the right thing because their reputations depend on it, right? They don't want to go down the road of the tobacco industry where the American public sort of woke up and realized, well, that's an industry that can't be trusted. So instead, they're playing this two-faced game, which is on one side to be looking like they're good guys, and then, you know, behind the scenes, it's just business as usual.
Yeah, and everybody else is paying the price. I'm glad you mentioned the deceptive labeling. I burst out laughing in the store. There on the white bread label was from whole grain. And what they're trying to do is capture that people have heard whole grain is good. So if it says whole grain, it must be good. And your example of the cereal is well taken. How, outside of educating, and the Environmental Working Group does a wonderful job. I have them on my monthly bill pay to donate because they're there for us. And they, as you said earlier, the amount of money that the commercial food industry pours into lobbying, we can't come close to. So, what can we do being more aware? And you gave some sites. I'd like you to give the names of those sites again so that people can go to them, including your own.
Sure. Yeah, well, you know, I always tell people there's no shortage of ways to get involved, right? So that's the good news. There are so many groups working around the country on various aspects of this problem. And, you know, whether it's trying to improve the food in your child's school or trying to get healthier foods available into, say, you know, poor neighborhoods, or going up from there trying to work through a food policy council, either at the local or state level, which is increasingly becoming more popular. These groups that come together and try to form, you know, regional, statewide policy around improving the food system. And then at the national level, you know, groups trying to change federal policy, and it was even international. You know, groups working on these issues. And so, you know, the groups I mentioned before related to who are working right now on the Farm Bill, our Environmental Working Group and the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, or NSAC. Another grassroots group I like based in Iowa is called Food Democracy Now. And they are, you know, in the belly of the beast there in the Midwest and have really work hard to represent small farmers, and because, you know, they're a dying breed and they really need our help to counter the these huge agricultural corporations. And then another group I like is Food and Water Watch. So they have an office in Washington and are also working on the Farm Bill and have a number of campaigns. Two more groups I'll mention, one that I work with directly. One is the Center for Food Safety, and they've had a longstanding campaign fighting GMOs and now have expanded their issues of expertise by having me work on broader food safety issues like food contamination and nutrition. And then finally, two more actually. Corporate Accountability International is a great group based in Boston, and they take on corporate power directly through shareholder actions and direct actions and so forth. And they also have a campaign directed at McDonald's and particularly trying to get that company to stop marketing to children. And another group along those lines that I work closely with is the Campaign for Commercial-Free Childhood. And their agenda is to stop all marketing to children, whether it's food or toys or sex or you name it. And that is an extremely important issue that I would love people to support. And unfortunately, we don't have enough attention being paid there. But that small group, also based in Boston, is highly effective and does do campaigns directed at corporations to get them to stop preying on children.
You know, that I did not know that. Thank you for bringing that up. And that's interesting. Are they making headway yet?
Well, they, they're very small. They do a lot for a small group. But I would say, what can work is just direct campaigning. So embarrassing companies. So, for example, a few months back, the company Scholastic was caught teaming up with the coal industry to provide educational materials in schools. And so, so the Campaign for Commercial Free Childhood teamed up with some environmental groups that said, what is this? Why are we feeding coal industry propaganda to children in the name of education? And sure enough, they were able to get Scholastic to break that relationship with the coal industry and not distribute those educational materials anymore. So that's an example of, when something is so obviously outrageous, we can win. And that's, I think it's important for people to realize that these, while of course it's an uphill battle, with the right campaign, with the right strategy, with the right passion, there's no question we can get corporations to at least stop doing some of the worst practices that they're engaging in and even get policies passed here and there, usually through local city councils, county level, and sometimes state level. It's a little harder, the higher you go in politics, the more challenging it is. But there have been examples. So another success story I'll mention recently was in the state of Maryland, and this was a victory spearheaded by the group Food and Water Watch through their Maryland subgroup, and they were able to get a bill passed to ban the use of arsenic in chicken feed, which you think, gosh, that seems like a no-brainer. But chicken feed is just a whole other kind of nightmare. But the point is, because chicken production is huge in the state of Maryland, which you'd be interested to know, this is a big victory. And and I think a really good example of how local action can, yield positive results. And, of course, when something like this happens, it helps inspire other locations to take similar action. And that's really how policy change happens, right? You start at the grassroots local level. This is a classic tactic that we learned from our victories in tobacco control and in other issues as well. But in public health, we know that the way we were able to see such success in reducing smoking rates in this country was through grassroots action, one city at a time, getting an indoor smoking law passed, one jurisdiction at a time, and then having the states kind of fall in line because, this was sweeping the nation, even the southern states now, where you never think we'd see smoking bans have come on board. So, I do think there is hope in this sort of, grassroots kind of one slow city or state at a time, but that's really how things can catch fire.
Well, that's good to know, and I want to make sure that we give your website, too, www.eatdrinkpolitics.com. And I think you've got good information on there. It was a pleasure to look at the website and see the information that you're putting out, Michelle.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the other website people can go to is appetiteforprofit.com, and that has information about my book and my blog as well.
Yes. And a good blog it is. Well, if you have just tuned in with us, we are on the third segment, getting ready to start the fourth segment. And I'm Dana Lake with The Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. We're talking with Michelle Simon, and we're talking about Appetite for Profit, her book, which is all about how the food industry undermines our health and how to fight back. So stay with us. We'll be back right after this break.
The moment you feel achy or run down, nip flu-like symptoms in the bud with Boron's Acylococcinum. Clinical studies show that Acylo, when taken at first signs of flu, reduces the duration and severity of flu-like symptoms such as headache, body aches, chills, and fever. For 65 years, families throughout the world have relied on Acylo. It works safely and naturally without causing side effects like drowsiness or interacting with other medications. Keep Acylo on hand and feel like yourself again. Acylo is available at Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Visit Acylo on the web at acylo.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. That's right, raw. Made with the highest quality standards to preserve raw nutrients, uncooked, untreated, unadulterated. They are binder-free with no fructose, maltodextrin, magnesium stearate, or cornstarch. With live enzymes and probiotics, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Wondering how to turn your bedroom into a hothouse? The answer is hot plants, the natural herbal way to make sex fun, vibrant, and satisfying. Two unique formulas, one for him and one for her, were developed by Chris Killham, the medicine hunter. Chris's book, Hot Plants, features these exciting products from enzymatic therapy. Hot Plants, from the science of enzymatic therapy, now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Some things are hard to stomach, and life doesn't stop for occasional immune challenges or intestinal distress. Probilarity from Metagenics offers a new, targeted probiotic approach for intestinal support. Help maintain control while traveling or as a follow-up to antibiotic therapy to support intestinal flora for healthy intestinal function. Probilarity provides ID-certified probiotic strains suggested by research to enhance certain aspects of immune function in addition to promoting a healthy balance of intestinal microflora. Probilarity is the go-to probiotic for patients on the go. Get it today. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Have you ever wondered why the cold and flu season occurs in the fall and winter months? One theory is because of a decrease in sun exposure, our bodies don't make enough vitamin D, which is essential to proper immune function. That's why medical experts recommend supplementing with vitamin D. Thorne Research's vitamin D products are made from pure vitamin D, with no preservatives or unnecessary ingredients added. Support your immune system with Thorne's vitamin D1000 and D5000. These and other immune-supporting formulas are always available at Village Green.
Welcome back, listeners, to today's final segment of The Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, Maryland. I'm Dana Lake, and I alternate the show with Dr. Kevin Passaro, and we are here every Sunday morning at 10 AM. I do want to remind you about the sale going on at Village Green. Started June 18th, and it's running through July 21st. 30% off Pathway nutrition products, 25% off other supplements, and 20% off body care products. So that's a good opportunity for you. We've had a really interesting discussion, and I hate to bring it to the end. We could go on and on. Our guest today is Michelle Simon, president of Eat Drink Politics, and our topic is how the food industry undermines our health and how to fight back. Michelle is the author of Appetite for Profit on this very subject. What we'd like to go over is some of the progress on trying to get labeling of GMO foods as the first step, a little bit about food safety, and the long-term goals that we want to keep in mind and what you can do. So, Michelle, take it away.
Sure. Well, on the issue of GMO labeling, there's definitely a stepped-up effort, I would say, to get these products labeled. And in fact, Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont even proposed an amendment to the Farm Bill to try and require GMO foods to be labeled, because we haven't been able to get that done through the FDA. but, you know, chances of that happening are probably pretty slim in the near future. So in the meantime, we do have a number of states that have taken up the issue. Several states have proposed bills to do the same thing. And right now in California, where I live, is a ballot initiative that was just got enough signatures to qualify for the ballot in November. And this, of course, is a huge fight because, you know, anytime anything happens in California, it has reverberations for the rest of the nation. And so, you know, there's already a front group formed by, I'd say, Monsanto and friends to try and stop this initiative from passing. But, you know, it remains to be seen if the proponents of the initiative can counter that, you know, huge public relations campaign that is sure to only get worse as November gets closer. But the point is, this does seem like, you know, momentum that is building to get these products labeled. And, you know, it's, what are these companies so afraid of, right? Why are they fighting tooth and nail to stop the labeling of GMO ingredients? And, you know, it's pretty clear that they know what we know, which is the American public doesn't want to eat in foods containing GMOs, and they want to at least have the choice by knowing what they're eating, and the food industry doesn't like that. So, but I do feel like this is something that, you know, Europe has done it, and, you know, the food industry didn't just go belly up there. So somehow, you know, it can be done. And that's another thing we tend to forget in this country. We just think that, you know, we know how to do things, or that no one else has had these ideas before, when in many arenas, European countries or countries around the globe are far ahead of us. And so so I think, you know, while it's still an uphill battle, I do think this is an issue that isn't going to go away. People are very determined to see happen. So that's some good news there.
Yes, I would agree with you. I had to laugh at the companies using high fructose corn syrup wanting to change the name.
Right.
Because they are very well aware that now people know that. They're looking to avoid it. So it is interesting. I'm pressed to think how they make a logical argument for not identifying something that they seem to be proud about, GMO,
right.
Why they wouldn't want it on there.
Yeah, well, they say things like, oh, it'll cause confusion and it's not necessary. And, you know, they come up with all kinds of excuses to just mean.
So the public is too stupid then.
Right, yeah.
To be told. Mm-hmm. And the issue of food safety certainly keeps surfacing. What's going on both in our country and internationally?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, you know, the good news is we got a law passed a couple of years ago to improve to get the Food and Drug Administration additional authority to step up its food safety inspections, and especially in the realm of imports. So it's pretty crazy that we actually import a lot of our food supply. Up to 60% of our fresh produce is imported, and a whopping 80% of seafood is imported. So, you know, we had a recent outbreak of salmonella in tuna that came from India, and that's because we, you know, don't have the capacity to properly inspect, and unfortunately other countries don't always adhere to good safety practices. And so this is a huge problem, and so we got a law passed to try and improve things, but excuse me, we're still waiting on the FDA to come out with final regulations, and that process has been stalled now for whether 6 months past the due date and a year and a half past when the law, you know, first got enacted. So until those regulations come out and are finalized, we're still kind of, you know, in this limbo period. So many groups are trying to put pressure on FDA, even the food industry. Wants, at least certain sectors of the food industry, the retail industry, wants to see these rules come out because they recognize the importance of, you know, maintaining a safe food supply and making sure they don't have to deal with recalls and so forth. So this is, you know, unfortunate that it's being stalled, but it hopefully will happen eventually and we'll get some stepped-up inspections. But, you know, the truth is, it's still a Band-Aid approach, right? And we still need to realize that food safety outbreaks and all of this, and even GMOs, are fundamentally a factor of our industrialized food system. And really we need to be rethinking how we are importing foods from around the globe. Increasingly, food is being industrialized globally. And, of course, the factory farms in this country are just horrendous, and animals are suffering. And we haven't even talked about the labor issue. I mean, you know, all kinds of evidence to show that people who work in, on agricultural fields and, of course, in these horrible, horrible factory farms are subject to all kinds of problems and abuse and so forth. And so, you know, I feel like all of these issues are connected, right? The public health fallout, the environmental disaster, the labor abuse, the animal suffering. I don't want to get too depressing here, but what I'm trying to say is that I think we really need to be looking at how these issues are all linked, and that it really comes down to the industrialization of the food supply driven by profit and corporations that don't have, you know, society's interests at heart. They really are about just making more money and being more efficient. And that's really something, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. We can have a values-based food system, and that is what some people are trying to look at, to say, well, how can we say, you know, have more local regional foods that puts people first and not profit? And so, you know, that's the kind of conversation I'd like to see more of.
Yeah, I like the term values-based, because the goal is to get as much food from the way it's produced, grown, into the public for sale with very little waste. And they do that with chemicals. The complaint has been that when we have organic foods, there's more waste. They aren't as pretty because we don't use pesticides. So that term values-based is really critical. I remember that oranges were bred for juiciness and nice bright color, not based on their vitamin C content. And there are natural oranges, different places in the world, that have very high vitamin C content. Our oranges have really very little, because that was not the focus.
Right.
So it's a change of the way not only people think, but the way the country's going to have to think. And the industrial change, that's the tough one, isn't it?
Oh, sure. I mean, you never want to take on the whole enchilada, so to speak. It's a lot harder. But I do think, you know, some of those conversations have been happening. You know, it's trickier to figure out what the solution is. And I think, you know, there are groups, like I said, creating these regionalized, localized food systems that can serve as an alternative. But we need to kind of shift public policy to help support that, and also to not ignore the fact that, you know, McDonald's isn't going anywhere just because some groups have figured out how to get some more local fresh produce into their neighborhood. So it's really connecting the dots to these efforts that are already going on with this bigger, you know, BMF that still exists.
You know, the social media has been pretty powerful, and we talked about the tobacco industry. A lot of these successes have been grassroots, because we can, for very little investment, get the word out, and it seems to be effective. It'd be interesting if we had an ongoing site where the factory farms had to have cameras and you could look in on your computer and see what's happening during the day, kind of like what's happening at daycare centers.
Right, yeah.
The transparency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, somebody said if animal factories had walls, you know, if they had glass walls, rather, you know, everyone would be vegetarian.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I do think you're right that social media and internet is driving a lot more interest. You know, the whole pink slime debacle is a really great example of that. It just took, you know, a couple of people talking about this for it to go viral and you know, brought a whole company down. So, you know, it's definitely, I think, if people are paying attention and, you know, have somehow the right magical formula of, you know, issues to get people's attention, then, you know, the impact can be positive.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. And I want to remind people that it's Eat, Drink, Politics, which is your site, and also the book, Appetite for Profit, all about the food industry, how it undermines our health, and what people can do to combat that. So thank you so much, Michelle, for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So this is very timely. And for those of you that are local, the Washington Post had food safety, food issues, food politics, and food security discussion this week, and encouraging what they call food walls, inner city gardens, rooftop greenhouses, and edible walls, meaning that you have a trellis and you put dirt in there and you grow vegetables and some fruits, and fresher longer, how to keep foods fresher longer, and veggies in a van, where produce is driven to the doorsteps of inner city residents. And there's been a beginning to convert many of these corner markets in the inner city from just providing junk food to also providing fresh produce. So those are all good local moves. And I want to thank you listeners for joining us on the Essentials of Healthy Living here on 1500 AM. You can access this show or any of the previous shows through myvillagegreen.com. And please remember, it's not the number of breaths you take. It's the moments that take your breath away. This is Dana Lake and Village Green wishing each and every one of you good health and a breathtaking day.
Ah, the joy of commuting in Washington. Whether you work on the Hill or outside of the Beltway, you know how stressful it is to get around. Stress can take a serious toll on your health, and Village Green Apothecary can help. We offer over 10,000 healthy living products, including top quality nutritional supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Our nutritionists and pharmacists are here to advise you about creating your very own individualized healthy living plan. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda, 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. May I help you?
Yeah, my car's entertainment system just isn't cutting it.
Easy answer. Get an HD radio receiver, 100% free digital sound, digital traffic, and great music choices from your local HD2, HD3 radio stations.
Well, what brands do you have?
Best Buy has new expanded HD radio inventory, Alpine, Kenwood, Pioneer, JVC, with prices as low as $120.
Wow, an HD radio digital entertainment center? Show me the way. HD radio, more radio, more value.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington.
NBC News Radio Special Report, I'm Craig Melvin. Breaking news out of Egypt, where the winner of their first presidential election since the ousting of Hosni Mubarak has been announced. NBC's Ayman Mohideen is in Tahrir Square, where supporters of Muslim Brotherhood candidate Mohammed